In its latest report, this last week, the US Census Bureau announced that in 2009, one in seven Americans was living in poverty. The Bureau defines poverty as any family of four living on less than $21,954 a year. That's the standard. Officials said that the number of people in poverty increased by 4 million between 2008 and 2009. Today, 43.6 million people live in poverty in the United States. Among the working age population, that is ages 18 to 65, poverty rose from 11.7% to 12.9%, the highest level since the 1960s. Meanwhile, the number of Americans without health insurance increased by 4.4 million between 2008 and 2009. And this number rose from 15.4% to 16.7%. This happened mainly because of the loss of employer-provided schemes during the recession. And the report also said that the group that suffered most from increasing poverty levels was children. Now, what does a sermon in the church have got to do with these issues? If you listen to the first reading from the book of Amos, the answer is everything. Everything. Hear these words. The prophet Amos says, "Hear this, you who trample upon the needy and destroy the poor in the land." Amos was a prophet in Israel when the nation was very prosperous under the reign of King Jeroboam II, and he reigned between 786 and 746 BC. And Israel owed its prosperity to successive agricultural successes, and also by the fact that that was a relatively peaceful time. There weren't any threats from foreign nations to Israel. But many of the leading Israelites were getting rich by exploiting the poor. Amos, also called the prophet of social justice, condemned the policies and the people that were oppressive to the poor. So today's readings end with these words: "Never will I forget a thing they have done." In other words, these leading Israelites were exploiting the poor. God says, "That I can never forget." In another place in the book of Amos, he says, God says something even more intense. He says, "I hate, I spurn your feasts. I take no pleasure in your solemnities. Your cereal offerings I will not accept, nor consider your stall-fed peace offerings. Away with your noisy songs. I will not listen to the melodies of your harps. But if you would offer sacrifices, then let justice flow like a river and goodness like an unfailing stream." Powerful words. Most Catholics are unaware that just like the Catholic Church has a body of teachings, for example, about the Eucharist, or just like the Church has teachings about scriptures and all these various worship of the church, there is a body of teaching called the social teachings of the Catholic Church. And this body of teaching began to develop in 1891 with Pope Leo XIII. He issued his encyclical entitled Rerum Novarum, or of New Things. Leo XIII studied the prophetic literature very carefully, particularly, you know, God's preferential option for the poor, that Israel was poor, they were slaves, but God acted on their behalf. That the prophet Amos would cry out in favor of the poor. So Pope Leo XIII studied these prophetic literatures, and he studied it very carefully, and said that the church must take a stance when it comes to issues that affect the poor. And so then began to develop this entire body of teaching called the Catholic Social Teachings. The latest one to add his voice to the Catholic Social Teaching is Pope Benedict XVI in his encyclical Caritas in Veritate, or Charity in Truth. He talks about justice in society. So what I want to do this evening is give us three points to think about, okay? These are not necessarily practical implications, but three things that we might want to reflect on in the days to come. And I'm basing myself on today's scriptures, and I'm basing myself on the Catholic social teachings. So here's my first point. The social teachings of the Catholic Church have 9 principles. Now, I'm not going to give you details of all those this evening, but if you are interested, you can go to, just Google Catholic social teachings and the principles, and you will have them. But here is just the titles. The 9 principles: community and the common good, rights and responsibilities, option for the poor, participation in social life, dignity of work, the rights of workers, stewardship of creation, solidarity, the role of government, and promotion of peace. So these are the principles, but the central principle on which all these principles rest is the sanctity and dignity of the human person. The dignity of every individual, poor or rich, does not matter. That is the key of these social principles. The centrality of the dignity of human person is so important today, particularly as we face this recession. Each day, the eyes of our politicians and the economists are fixated, as it were, on Wall Street and the numbers that these huge electronic screens display. And the focus is, as it were, that these numbers should be positive so that the market system somehow remains intact. We want to prop up these numbers. I have no problem with the market system of the economy. My problem is, economy is not about numbers. It's about people. We're trying to keep these numbers up, but the numbers are telling us that people continue to slip into poverty. The number of poor among us, this nation, the richest nation in the world, continues to increase. The dignity of the human person continues to be compromised. And the scriptures and the Catholic Church is telling us that it's not about the numbers. It's about the people. It's about their life. It's about their dignity. It's about their well-being. People are not made for numbers. Numbers are made for people. Second point. Today's gospel ends with the words, "No servant can serve 2 masters. He will either hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, we live in a world where people are convinced that you can serve God and mammon, provided you keep these two separate. Don't bring God and money together. You keep them separate. You keep God in the private recesses of your life. Don't let that influence your work or how you make your finances. See, Jesus did not live in a secular world. Jesus lived in the world where the temple and God's law was at the center of life. And God's law affected all areas of life. And we live in an increasingly secular world. And the secular world tells us, your religion, keep it in church. Keep it at home. That's something private. And so, people, they do engage in unconscionable profit-making and still lift their hands in worship. People exploit workers and still not feel guilty. People do support policies that increase joblessness and feel justified. Yesterday in Britain, the day before yesterday in Britain, Pope Benedict called for global economic policies that are underlined by ethical principles. Global economics without ethics, where God has nothing to do with it, is bound to lead us to disaster. And the scriptures and the Catholic social teachings are telling us that both faith and society must be based on justice, on peace, and on the dignity of every human individual. My third point. The answer to the issues raised in today's readings and in today's society is prescribed in today's gospel reading. The answer is prudence. Prudence is the ability to exercise sound judgment in practical affairs. Once again, the definition of prudence. The ability to exercise sound judgment in practical affairs. If you notice in that parable, Jesus does not commend the ingenuity or the dishonesty of the steward, no. But Jesus commended him why? He took steps to make sure that his future was secure. And what is Jesus saying? Just like this man knew in the ways of the world, just like he knew how to take care of the future, you disciples, you take care that in the ways of God, which is justice and peace, in the ways of God, your future is secure. We should be prudent enough to handle our resources the way God intends for us to handle it. We should be prudent enough to assign people their dignity. We should be prudent enough to consider people more important than profit. We should be prudent enough to consider people more important than numbers. We should be prudent enough not to sacrifice our values for the sake of material wealth. We should be prudent enough to pursue justice and peace at all costs. Otherwise, Jesus says, if we cannot trust you, if I cannot trust you with dishonest wealth, how can I trust you with greater wealth, which is our eternity? As we bring ourselves before the altar, I'm wondering if we can say, all of us, that we can say, God, we don't just bring our spiritual life before you. We bring our entire life, which includes our relationships, our relationship with the poor, our financial life, our spiritual life, the choices we make, our longing for justice and peace. We bring all of it before our God. And we say, God, please bless us. Because here we are trying to be prudent enough to love you, to love the ones that you give to us, to long for justice and peace, and to make sure that our worship is sincere, that our worship is honest, that our worship is pure and holy. This evening, because of what we care for, God, and particularly the poor, may God find our worship acceptable in God's sight. And the people of God said,